The views and opinions expressed in the Humanizing the Headset podcast are those of the authors, guests, and hosts of the podcast, and do not necessarily reflect the opinion or position of Humanizing the Headset as a whole. This podcast may contain adult language and adult content. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back, everyone.
Hi. I haven't been here for a while.
It has been a while.
Yeah.
We took a little bit of a hiatus so that we could, it's been crazy. It's been a crazy few months, really, is the truth of it. But we are back. We have some really cool guests lined up for the next few episodes. And the first one is today we have Madeline, who is a SWAT dispatcher. We wanted to bring Madeline on to talk about that because it is a seriously unique thing to have in a dispatch center, I think. So,
real quick, I feel like we need I'm going to have to buy a sound machine so that when we introduce somebody, we can get a bunch of applause, like, hey, like old
or like
school,
clap track,
like fireworks or
yeah, old school
trumpets.
Radio show style.
Yeah, exactly.
And the folks at home can't see it, but I just kind of did a head bob back and forth. Like
it was real cute. It was the snake head thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, I snapped too.
And obviously we have Norm, and Charisse is also here.
Morning, afternoon, something.
Norm sounds like he's shaking a martini, which he might be. So.
No, it's bad for you. It's not good for you.
Martinis at noon? Hmm.
Well, I just took my medicine, not to get too personal, but I took some medicine and I just ate, and the martini's probably not a good idea. Plus, no, I had a little whiskey last night. Yeah.
So. Way to be a responsible adult.
There you go. See? Yes. You're in. We like it already.
Martinis after one.
After one. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And you schedule it. That's even more responsible.
Oh. He's got it in his Palm Pilot and everything.
I've grown up since the last podcast. Yeah, my Palm Pilot. Oh, Jesus. It's probably an app for an iPhone now, right? A Palm Pilot app?
It probably is.
Probably.
I got to look now. Just please continue the conversation. I'm going to go look this up on my app.
Norm's going to scour the app store for a Palm Pilot.
You think I'm kidding.
So Madeline, can you tell us about your dispatch career, aside from obviously being a badass SWAT member? Can you tell us how long you've been dispatching? Is this your only agency?
Yeah, absolutely. So I work with DUCOM. We're in DuPage County. We're one of two centers within the county itself. And I've been there for almost 7 years now. And then I've been on the SWAT team since 2017, so almost 5 years now. I kind of just fell into my lap. Normally there's not a lot of openings when it comes to tactical dispatch. Once you're like on the team, you're kind of not necessarily a lifer, but you're there for a long time. So dispatch kind of also fell into my lap too. Like I went to school for emergency management. I thought I wanted to be a police officer, did some testing and saw how much the other people really wanted to be. And I was like, maybe this is what I want to do for my career. And I was working in the lab at a hospital at the time, and I realized I really don't like interacting with the public face-to-face. I'm more of like a background player. And so my boyfriend, now husband at the time, said, why don't you try for dispatch? And so I started applying, and then I got into DUCOM. So that's been my only agency, but it's a pretty large agency. We have 44 towns that we dispatch for, police, fire, EMS. So it's been... I love it. It's. I'm glad that it's what I ended up choosing as my career.
That's and how awesome. Many dispatchers is full staff for you guys with that many agencies?
I think our full staff is 83.
Okay.
Okay. Do you know how close you are to that? But just off the top of your head,
we're at 67 right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone's
struggling.
We're
definitely short. Yeah.
So Madeline's actually talking to us from the bathroom because she's on forced overtime right now.
Yeah. She's on her 15-minute break. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Get short.
No, she's actually on a SWAT call right now.
Yeah, she's literally in the trailer.
Hold on.
Talking about that, because Charisse had brought up when Charisse had been at training recently, they were talking about all the agencies that were with her at this training being short-staffed. And I was just at this conference in Nashville. Same thing. Everyone is just like, I mean, I feel we're always short-staffed, right? Like everyone in the industry is, but I feel like recently it's become a lot worse. I don't know if it's the.
I feel like we have a larger shortage of applicants now than we used to. There was never a shortage of applicants before that wanted to get into this, and I feel like we've really seen a shift in not just applicants but even qualified applicants.
Oh yeah,
I completely agree. Yeah.
And I don't know if that has to do with, you know, the atmosphere around law enforcement or what is going on there. But
my theory is it's no different than anywhere else. Like there's a crap ton of jobs out there right now. There's less people putting in for them. I even just saw, and not to get in the weeds on job stuff, but I just saw an article the other day that said, 2.5 million, maybe it was 4.5 million people. It was a shit ton of people just quit their jobs in April. And I was like, what? But coincidentally, the available jobs went up by so many. I'm like, is this actually in this news article now?
Yeah, that's how math works.
Yeah, I know. But they quoted it like it was some miraculous.
Yeah, like some weird. Somebody did. Look at this weird correlation. If people quit their jobs, more jobs are available. Like, yeah, that math does math. So
not to be grim, but it's no different when somebody passes away. We're like, oh, there's a house up for sale soon here, you know, that kind of thing. It's our sick, twisted humor. But you know what? I'm curious about Madeline. So do you call yourself a SWAT dispatcher? So is it SWAT team by you guys or TAC team?
We're technically, so I guess in our system, we're considered TAC dispatchers.
Okay.
So I'm a part of the SWAT team, but tactical dispatcher is probably a better term, I guess.
We know it's the same thing. In some places use one term, other places use another term. But what I'm curious about, did it exist before you came to the agency?
Yeah. So for DUCOM, how they do their hiring, they have like an orientation for everyone to attend. I think most agencies do that. I'm not sure. But and so in it, they give the whole spiel about the different specialties they have. And that's when they talked about tactical dispatch. And I was like, you can respond to the scene and like help that way. And I was like, that's something that I want to do before I even really finish like the application process. So then a year in to working there, a spot opened up and I was like, we'll see. Cause I'm like, I'm just out of probation. I know I'm newer. We'll see if it works out, but not a lot of people. I mean, it's a dedication cause you're technically on call even more than, I mean, people decide to barricade themselves randomly, you know, it could be Christmas, it could be 5 a.m., it could be 7 p.m. So you have to be ready to respond all the time.
Right. So what are the requirements, at least for you guys, for that? Do you have to have a special certification or?
So it varies. So like we went from one team, which was called FIAT at the time, and it was specific to the agencies that we served. And then they combined it with the whole county. So now we're a county-wide team. So there's differences, and I don't know what the new requirements are since I was on it and then kind of like grandfathered it to the new combined team. But when I applied, you had to at least be in obviously good standing. You had to be on a different, they wanted you to be on a different shift than the other, different shift or different rotation depending than the other members on the team. And then you had to do an interview with the commander of the SWAT team, our deputy director, one of the members of the SWAT team, the tactical dispatcher, and then they would decide from there if you qualified. And you had to answer like 7 questions about why you wanted to be it. And then in the interview, go through the 7 questions.
Oh, okay. Wow. That's a lot. Have you taken any tactical dispatching classes? That didn't used to be a thing, but it is now.
So yeah, and I didn't know that it was necessarily a thing, and I was only like a year into working there, so I did not have a class on tactical dispatch. Since then, I've done TERT, so now I can go to like different TERT calls, which is cool. I haven't had a chance to yet, but that was a really interesting, and I think that even speaks to tactical dispatch in a way, It applies to the same kind of mentality, but it's really just kind of learning on the job. And luckily we train, we do our major trainings, I think quarterly. So if not a little bit more frequently now. So you kind of just learn as you go. You're kind of just thrown in there.
That's awesome.
I was really excited. I had done a tactical dispatch class a few years ago, and our agency was doing a school shooting simulation.
Okay.
And so I was actually invited to go up and be in the trailer and do the tactical dispatching. And that was right after we had put the Motorola StarCom radios in place, and they didn't work in the school. So everybody was in the school, and I'm sitting out in a trailer, and I can hear like two people out of the 75 that they had on this drill. And so I was kind of just, because I was ready, you know, like I had all my notes and I was like, yeah, we're going to do this. And I'm like, is anybody talking? Like, like what is happening? And so I ended up calling somebody's cell phone. And of course the cell phone works, right?
Yeah.
And that was like, you know, they've since corrected that, but they were having initially when StarCom first came up here, they were having a lot of dead spots inside of buildings.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I would love to get the opportunity to try that again.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, like, for real.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the worst. So you build it all up, you're all excited, and then it's like crickets.
Yeah, no, I called the phone and I'm like, are they like, what do you know, does somebody have to say go? Like, is, you know, is it a shotgun start? Like, what are we doing?
No. Like, no,
shotgun like, start. Could you imagine for an active shooter drill? Oh, God. I'm sorry. That's so terrible.
No, I know. But I was just like, you know, like, what's the deal? Why, you know, why can't I hear anything? And they're like, well, they're wondering why you're not answering. So we're just going with it. And I'm like, okay, well, I can't hear anybody up here. So
I feel like when StarCom became a thing, that was an issue everywhere, because we had that happen so many times where we couldn't hear anything.
Yes.
Yeah. And the whole
and like, goal. No one thought to test this beforehand. I don't
know. The whole goal of it was to have it work in buildings, you know, and it's still pretty damn decent radio system.
It is.
But
well, when you look at that still training, have some issues. You realize like how grim that actually could have been if it was an actual
active
scenario. And, now they're all in the building and nobody can communicate with them.
Yep. Yeah. Well, we did we had an active shooter training with the SWAT team too, and it was really cool because it was during the not that active shooter is cool, but it was during it was summertime.
I'm pretty sure it's just dispatchers who listen to the podcast, so we're okay. Good.
Yeah. So it was during the summertime, so they had a bunch of the high schoolers come and do act for it and that kind of thing. And when they did it, they wanted it to be realistic, so they pulled the fire alarm, thinking this is great because this is what we'll go through, which is absolutely true. But with the fire alarm blaring in the background, trying to understand what was on the radio, we were like, gosh, in a real life situation, we're going to need someone to go in there and try to disable that, because we're not going to be able to understand what your location is and what's going on in there. It was really interesting.
So I was going to say, who's taken a 911 call from someone who's calling to report a fire alarm going off?
Yeah.
And you're just like, what?
Yeah,
I know the fire alarm's going off. What else? Like,
is there a fire?
Yeah.
Beep, beep, beep,
yeah.
Beep.
And they're just like, the fire alarm's going off. You're like, right, move on. What's the next part of this?
So do you, Madeline, what you said a second ago, and I'm trying to figure out the logistics of everything. So you guys have one tech team. Is it for the county, or is your tactical dispatch for multiple eight, you know, you understand what I'm trying to say? So you said you dispatch for 40 some agencies, obviously. But is it one main tac team that comes in that you go with, and that agency can call you out like an ILEAS call out or the NIPAS call out, that type of thing in the county?
Yeah. So it's one SWAT team for the whole county. And then every agency, depending on if they want to join, can send members to then be a part of the SWAT team. And then we respond out to wherever we're needed within the county.
Okay. How many dispatchers are part of that tech team?
We have 8 spots. I think we have 6 people right now.
Nice.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We share it. So, cause we have obviously it's 2 agencies within, DuPage. So the other agency has 2 that are on it. We have 4 and then 2 others. Because we consolidated county, the other center got county. So 2 of them used to be on county SWAT team. And so they're a part, which has been really helpful because different teams use different lingo. And that sounds like it's minuscule that you can adapt to it, but some of the stuff that they yell when they're excited, you're like, what does that mean? And having someone having someone from each agency to like
interpret that,
translate is super beneficial.
Yeah, there's been times where we listen to other agencies on different channels and we can hear them. And I'm like, what on earth are they even talking? I don't and it's like an agency next door to us. Like they're not that far.
I feel like that with FatPod, even when I see things in FatPod is like an information sharing program where other local agencies, like they share, you can see their CAD calls essentially. Right.
Oh, okay.
Now some of the information's redacted, you know, like none of the lead stuff goes in. Some agencies you really can't see their notes, but some you can. And I mean, even their notes sometimes, like I still don't understand, you know, what a J3 is or a J5.
I was just gonna say the J code.
Or a J1, like I don't understand.
There's a county next door to us that uses J codes all the time. And I've had new officers that came from that county who have said that. They're like, yeah, I'm out with a J5. I'm like, I have no idea what that means. And they're like, oh, sorry, it's a female. And I'm like, just say a female, weirdo. It's
you're like J5. You're like, is that their street name? Like,
right. I'm like, yeah.
What's up with this shit? Why would you ever name a female a J5?
I don't know. And I could be wrong. I don't know if female is J5, but they have it for like a male subject, a juvenile, whatever. Like there's different J code. I don't know what any of it means.
Okay.
Well, like most agencies, like when they're okay, they say they're 10-2. There's a small handful of them that say that they're code 4. Yes. So, you know, the first time I had an officer say I'm code 4, I'm like, where am I putting this?
And everybody, right.
Like, I don't know what he's giving me a code for.
You know? And then I have officers that say I'm 10-4, and I'm like, that doesn't mean anything.
Great. I'm glad you heard me, but are you okay?
Right. Yeah. So no, that's awesome that you have like representatives from everywhere to kind of help. That's really cool.
Now, do you guys try to push using plain language? I mean, obviously I know in the heat of the moment, people will tend to revert back to what they know. So like if somebody's yelling something out, like you said, you know, to bridge between the two agencies, you know, to translate what that means. But do you try to push a plain language or is it just kind of whatever they do, they do?
Yeah, plain language is usually, that's what we're pushing for always. And now, I mean, we're on encrypted channels. So that on top of it, the push is for always plain language. And we have TEMS as a part of the team, so tactical medics, and they don't use the same lingo that police officers use, you know, that they message receive, they don't 10-4. Not that they don't know what that means, but like when you get more technical and they're responding as a part of a group, and they train together, so they learn it, but it's good to just have it. Because we also have had instances with riots and whatnot where we've merged with a SWAT team, and knowing each other, knowing that you're using plain language just makes it that much easier.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And you had mentioned before that you guys do like a few big trainings a year. I was going to ask, like, how often do you do exercises and stuff outside of your actual deployments?
Yeah. So I want to say I'd have to actually look at the calendar, but I think they aim for at least 5 large scenarios. The SWAT members as a whole, not including like tactical dispatch, they'll train biweekly just because it's such a specialized team. Like 1 week, like biweekly. So the 1 week is range, then the other week is actually like scenario based. But then I think either 4 to 5 times a year we'll actually train as a whole group, which is really super beneficial because then we work out any kind of kinks or like if someone has a new idea of how we should be approaching something, we can try it scenario based. Or if they had a call and God forbid there was some sort of mistake and they want to rehash it to then see like what caused the issue to begin with, that's a great way to do it too.
That's
and I like it.
Amazing.
And we all get, what's really great about it is we all get practice of switching to different roles because you say tactical dispatcher, SWAT dispatcher, but there's a variety of roles that we can fill on a call. So while I love scribing, that's probably my favorite role to play. I love documenting, I guess, maybe that's why, but like, that's probably my favorite role to fill. I have to know how to do all of them. And depending on who is the first person on scene, you're all five roles, you know, or all six roles, depending on what the call is. So you have to know how to do every single one. So the scenario-based training is great because we get to then try all those roles, find what our weaknesses are, find what our strengths are, and then feed to them as a team as a whole, which is really cool.
That's actually really a good awesome. Segue to a question I had with Scribe. What do you use a CAD to document it? Like what program do you use? And with the other agent, are you guys on the same CAD system?
Yeah. So within the last 2 years, we went to two or three, it's kind of a blur. We went to the same CAD system, but we don't use CAD currently to do our documentation for an actual incident. Okay. While we have access to the CAD, they prefer it keeping it separate. And I don't know the exact reasons why. I don't know if it's easier to pull the report so you don't have all the base notes of the first call or whatnot. So when I first started, we were just doing paper and then typing it, sending it, wow. which I liked because I can scribble fast, but I also type fast. So it's just adapting to typing. But since we've merged, we go to just typing the notes. It just depends though, too, because when you get on scene, I don't carry the computer. Our team leader does. So if she's not there yet, I'm scribing on paper until she gets there. Or if it's raining and you don't have a vehicle yet, you're probably like hovered in your car writing, probably not typing. It's just depending on the environment.
So once she gets there with the computer, are you using a CAD program or are you just using like a Word doc or?
It's just an Excel spreadsheet.
Wow. Okay. That's a lot to keep track of.
Does it I'm curious.
It auto timestamps.
Okay.
Unless you mess up
like
the formula,
one that's already been like. Done. It's already been formatted for this specific
it's
use.
Formatted okay. Like it's our own specific log. So it's super easy. It's saved as an icon. You just pull it up and you start typing.
Okay, that's cool. I was going to say, if you're pulling up a blank Excel spreadsheet and having to like format all these codes and stuff in there.
Well, and the other thing is too, I mean, as most police versus fire dispatch and those types of things, when you're... I think a lot of times, especially new people, when they start, they want to type everything. They want to type everything. I'm going to type everything I heard, every little word. And it's like, you don't need to do that shit. You just need the important stuff or summarize it really quick and get it in there so it makes sense. Are you doing that same thing? Is there specific things that you're copying down that you have to look for?
Yeah. So you want to, obviously you want to document as much as you can, but little things like, hey, did you find my bag? I'm not documenting that because that doesn't matter. But the important things of like when they step off, who's on what team, you have to make sure that you have that all written down. And that's the great part about having so many people on the team is if I miss a name, someone next to me heard it. So we're feeding off of each other too. So I might be scribe, but that person next to me is like my backup. So it's a good coalition of everyone working together.
Is your backup another dispatcher?
Yeah. Okay. So when we respond out to a scene, we obviously all arrive at different times. We all live spread across the county. We might be responding from the center. We might be responding from home. So first person on scene gets there, they meet up with the commander, and then they just start scribing and establishing radio right away. So you're doing two tasks at once, but you're getting the basis of what's going down, what teams, who's already on scene, checking people off, what equipment's on scene. And then the next person arrives, comes up to them, and they just say, here, you do this. And you pass it along down the line. So
you're essentially like the dispatch commander, the first one on scene kind of.
Yeah. And like once our team, And like once our team leader gets there, she takes that role on and then is like, here, you do this, or we need someone here. But whoever is first on scene is essentially like taking command with the command, helping them, and then going from there.
How many do you get go out with? Like, so if there's a call out, okay, not on an exercise, but if there's a call out, how many of you go?
Preferred is at least three. Okay. Feeling great is 4 to 5. But it just depends on, obviously each center has their own shortages and that kind of thing. And depending on if we can find coverage, they prefer you to go when it's your off time, whether as opposed to working and that kind of thing. But I mean, we've done it with two and it's fine. It works out better when you have at least three.
Now, do you have, when you have an active situation, and you guys are out there, is do you guys have another backup that's like back at DUCOM monitoring and assisting, like making phone calls or any of that, or do you guys handle all of that?
We handle all of that.
I mean, I'm sure people are listening. We all know everybody's listening.
Yeah. There is probably someone listening at the center. And if we did need to call the center, and I've had to afford a call for a phone number or that kind of thing, absolutely they'll help us. But it's usually just us on scene handling it. Like if we need the airspace closed, that's us calling it, that kind of stuff.
Wow, that's awesome. And so you've referred several times when you're out on scene. Have you guys ever worked an incident from a center for some reason?
We did. So we had a... what was at the time thought to be an active shooter situation happened early hours, 1 a.m., 2 a.m., large hotel. And to get it started, because our SWAT operators are already, some of them are already working the streets. And when they have a call, right, they'll leave from the street. So their response time is going to be, and they're also in a squad car, so, you know, right, they can go a little faster. Their response time is going to be great in comparison to some of us that are coming from home. So when that situation happened, because we're then also paging for emergency staffing to come to our center, because we're going to be inundated by certain calls too. We luckily had a SWAT dispatcher that was already at the center, who started it for us to then just say, here's who's on scene, that kind of stuff, before we got there. So it hasn't happened that often, but it is kind of beneficial at times, especially when it's that chaotic of a scene.
Yeah, because I know you talked about TERT earlier, and I don't know if it was last year, 2 years ago, that there was the first virtual deployment for TERT.
Oh, okay.
We had some flooding in Southern Illinois, and they needed help monitoring radio traffic for
fire departments. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we ended up, my center volunteered to help with that because we had access to those StarCom channels.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because I was like, so a virtual deployment could be a thing. And I don't know if that would be more beneficial to you guys or if it's actually better for you guys to be on scene. I don't know how you feel about that.
I don't know if it's personal preference. I'd have to ask like others on my team. I prefer to be on scene just because you see what they're seeing, you see what they're doing, and then you're also communicating right then and there with everyone, and it just makes it easier.
Right.
And it's just fucking cool that you're on scene.
Oh yeah, it's so cool.
Realistically, like, come on.
Do you feel like you're in danger at all? I'm sure they set the mobile command post like way far away, but
they are very conscious of our safety and making sure that we're okay as well, which is great. Obviously, I don't want them to be focused. I want them to be focused on the scene, but they are aware of us too, because we're not wearing vests or anything, you know? So the only time that I felt like a little nervous about it, and I think it was because it was my first call out, I was the second person on scene. So I was like,
nobody here.
Yeah. and so like figuring out where I'm supposed to go and that kind of stuff. And then they're talking about how the person that was barricaded is affiliated with a gang, and then they're talking about the gang, and I'm like, I don't know that gang's colors. And then like outside of an apartment complex, and there's a lot of people gathering because you have all the cool trucks and that kind of stuff. And so I'm like, if some of these people are affiliated, I would have no clue. And just like,
then you start looking around to see what you can weaponize in your trailer.
Yeah.
What like, can I throw?
My clipboard is kind of hard. Like,
yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But just like, that's a whole nother aspect of like, when you're dispatching from a center, you have caller awareness, caller situation awareness, but not yourself situation awareness. So like when you're at an actual call, you also have to have your own situational awareness, which was a whole different factor that I didn't even think about really until, not that we hadn't talked about it, but I didn't really like, not comprehend, but like really give thought to it until I was
on
that first
call out. It didn't click
until
you were living it.
Right, because we're in a controlled environment. And then when you're out of that controlled environment, but expected to still perform, you're like, hold on, I've got way too many things to think about now. Like 1 second.
Yeah.
You know, when they separated us for the for COVID, our agency separated our 911 center into three locations originally. Oh, wow. And I was working out of the courthouse in our county seat. And I was working the night of the civil unrest. Mm-hmm. And we were in an old jury room, and the courthouse was essentially closed down because of COVID. You know, and they were just doing everything like very minor or very major things that needed to be attended to, like through Zoom. There really wasn't a whole lot of activity there. but the room we were in was off of a courtyard that had like these huge, like floor to ceiling windows. And it's accessible from the street. And I remember thinking, cause I mean, like they were marching right past the room we were sitting in. And I was thinking, you know, like that was the first time it occurred to me, like they could just like throw stuff through these windows and come in here. And, you know, we're sitting ducks in this room.
Yeah.
You know, and it just, that was kind of scary. And that was like the first time that it had ever really like occurred to me that like, wow, like maybe I should like pay more attention to this kind of stuff, like even on the regular day to day.
Yeah, it's like I had never really thought of, and it makes sense, but I had never really thought about communications being a necessary target for that kind of stuff. Until you're pulling up to work and they have your streets blocked by snowplows and you have to show your ID more than you've ever had to in your life, because you're like, oh, I guess we could be considered a target.
Well, because I mean, taking us out would, I mean, like, that's huge, you know, hugely detrimental to all of the operations that are occurring.
Well, even didn't that happen in Minnesota?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They burned the building down.
I think didn't they do that to what was the one in Missouri too? Didn't they start the police department on fire?
Oh, I think so too.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Oh, the Michael Brown stuff or whatever it was down there.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. I think even if they're not doing it strategically to cut communications, as soon as you see something that says police, sheriff, 911, whatever, it's like, okay, we're just gonna go after this because we're pissed off and you're part of the problem, you know. So you're completely vulnerable, and that's where that extra, I could see that easily being a role too. If you're on scene in a case like you were talking about with all these people, now somebody becomes lookout, like, okay, somebody else now has to monitor something completely new that we didn't have to think about because there's not somebody standing in here with an AR or a handgun or whatever to keep watch over us. Now we have to do it, you know?
Right.
So that's one of those, I guess, lessons you learn on the fly when you're, when you're live. Yeah. Did you guys do the Oak Brook incident?
I didn't get to respond. I was hurt at the time, but they did respond. Yeah.
Did they? Okay. For those that don't know, there was a mall shooting in Oak Brook, all of us know, but Oak Brook, Illinois, about a month ago, month and a half ago, probably.
It was December, end of December.
Was it? No.
Yeah, it was, I think, like Christmas Eve or like the day before Christmas Eve. I
swear it was this year. Man, I'm not.
Yeah, no concept of time at this point.
Yeah, you're thinking. Not at all. Yeah, but either way, it's crazy. And then they had a different issue not too far from there in Rosemont. That was a month or so ago, a month and a half ago. That one, I know for sure. But yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, it was December 29th or something like that, or 24th. Look at you with the memory. Man, see, I forget all that crap. It's so funny. She's got that tactical brain. She does. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with it. I just, once I would go out there, if I've scribed it and I've done it, when I leave, okay, I'm done. It's not here anymore.
It's just gone. But, there's too much going on to try to remember all of it. But
I think I have to wonder if it's a guy thing, you know, and I don't mean that in a bad way. You guys, so all three of you clearly, just in the few minutes we've been talking, Madeline, have already shown that you remember those details. And I know both Kaylee and Charisse do. Charisse is like, oh yeah, I remember taking that call. They said he had green shoestrings on it, and that was 1947. I am like
Rain Man with some of that stuff, but like, you know, ask me the periodic table of elements and I'm like,
what?
Right.
What now?
Right.
Yeah.
Apparently I found my my niche for where, you know, this.
But a lot of the women in our center do the same thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about it. And the guys, I can tell you right now, with the exception of maybe one or two out of, what is there, six of us? I think we have six or seven men. Might remember a lot of those details. Other than that, most of us are like, yeah, okay, whatever.
You're very supportive of us that do, though. You're like, oh, yeah, yes.
Yeah, fantastic.
That's absolutely what happened.
Yeah. There's a lot of trust there.
I was there. No, I was talking about my previous job at another agency, Norm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was there, though. I remember that.
I was there in spirit. Yeah.
That's right.
I was supporting
you. I'm always with you.
Yeah.
I was supporting you preemptively.
It's awesome. No,
I definitely, we have that where it's like, I remember someone's name and date of birth, but I don't know what I had for breakfast yesterday.
Yeah.
Did I even eat?
Not how that stuff comes back to you.
Right. Yeah. Like, oh yeah, we dealt with her on a call. It was in 2019. She was at this house with this guy and she had a red car and you're like, oh wow. And you're like, did you remember to fill out your timesheet? And I'm like, no.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Trust me, every 2 weeks I'm like, please fill out your timesheets, everybody. It's gonna be your Friday. I have to do the timesheets this weekend. Please fill them out.
So I have a question. So I I ended up being the, we'll say, the fortunate one under the headset for a major incident we had. And they ended up, I mean, it was probably the largest scale thing I've ever dispatched. And they ended up bringing in some DHS choppers. We had an ICE chopper. We had a state chopper. Like everybody and their mom responded to this incident, and we patched everything through. And one of the issues we were having was, I want to say, we'll just say it was one of the choppers because I don't want to call them out. But, you know, they had FLIR and they were, you know, checking fields. And for whatever reason, the patch didn't work for the choppers. I could hear them all on the same channel, but they couldn't hear the guys on the ground, and the guys on the ground couldn't hear them. And the one chopper is like, oh, I, excuse me, checked the field to the east. And it picked up some deer, maybe a few rocks that are still warm from the sun, and, you know, probably some bugs. And I mean, like, it was just like, hey, shut up.
Yeah.
You know, like, how about the field's clear? Like, I have other shit going on right now.
Yeah.
I need you to be quiet. Like, how do you maintain control of those situations? Because I mean, like, I was just like, okay, we got it. You know, keep your traffic to a minimum. We have other people that need to talk.
Yeah,
there wasn't much I could do at that moment.
Yeah, we do it where we'll call radio priority. So depending on what's going down, the commander might just be like, we don't need to know this, radio priority, that kind of stuff, like cut it or like interrupt emergency traffic, that kind of thing. I think it works out. So we don't have all those outside factors. I think when you add in the other eight, and I mean, a chopper normally, at least when I'm listening to ISPRN, like they're doing their own thing. They're telling you play by play. I don't think they have it sometimes in their noggin. Well,
because I mean, they're not in the danger zone. Like they're flying up above, you know, sure. Like I get that. And it was just like, you know, like, what'd you eat for breakfast, dude? Get off my air, you know?
And I think what's great about SWAT and when they train together is that they cut out all that bullshit, essentially. They know that it's necessary only on the radio. And they also have, when they're wearing their headsets, they can talk to each other without talking on the radio, which I think is super beneficial. And it cuts down on the, hey, I'm over here, will you meet me over here? Like that kind of stuff. Cause we don't need to know that.
Right.
Unless you're changing a specific location and you're taking your whole team, then we're going to mark it down.
If I need to know where you are, but your buddy around the corner. Yeah. The idle chit chat that is unnecessary, but I mean, like that can be detrimental when, I mean, you're essentially looking for somebody who's armed and dangerous, you know, like I need the air for everybody who might need a key up.
Yeah.
And that's why we, from my knowledge of how we approach situations and when it's like a large scale call out, we try to stay on one specific channel. And then if there's another channel involved, like the main hometown channel, we'll monitor, but we're not going to merge. Because SWAT has a specific objective and they're sticking to that objective. So they'll be informed by us what's going on, but only what they need to know, not all the nonsense.
I think two things. One, Charisse forgot to say that was a parking complaint in Long Grove, and that we had to call out all those people to find the registered owner of that vehicle. But I have more to say on that, but I'll do that while we're not recording. But the fact is those other helicopters or choppers were outside agencies that don't train with those groups. And they're used to going up, just like when they call out a,
it's like the weather chopper. They're just like, it's beautiful. Sun's shining. There's no traffic. Right. And you're like, no one cares.
You pull in a third party that, that has a skill, but they don't train with you. So they're just going to, they're just excited to be there. You know, hey, look at us. We get to be part of this major scale event and we're going to check in on the radio every 2 seconds and let you know what we're doing.
Right.
They think they're doing the right thing, but nobody ever thinks to, and that's to your guys' credit. You know, I know you came in after it was developed, but you're part of that group. And to your guys' credit, it sounds like you do a shit ton of training with a lot of people so that everybody is on the same page and you're doing it regularly. You know, Charisse talked about this large scale active shooter training that we did after we got the radios. Well, that was like 4 years ago, you know? That's the last major one we've had.
Yeah, military doing those is so them. Important.
I know. There's no
otherwise training. You never identify these issues. You never know that it's not working until it's not working.
Yeah. Right.
And then you're like, oh, fuck. No one can hear each other on the radio. This is right. Cool. Yeah. Now what right. do we do?
No, yeah. And scenario-based training, I think, is huge for what we do. I mean, even if you look at our brand new training telecommunicators, you know, I mean, we can tell them all kinds of things, but the actual knowledge and experience they gain to become TCs is from actively doing it themselves. It's from taking those phone calls. I mean, they can sit and listen to me all day long, but I feel like the real knowledge and experience and everything that they gain is from them doing it themselves.
Yeah. And even weather stuff. Weather is a big thing for our area. You know, we're all in the Midwest. We get a lot of weird weather that ranges, and it's a pretty wide range of stuff. And
in a day,
work, yeah, in one,
and the times when our county literally turns into a lake.
Right. Oh yeah.
And I get teased at work all the time for, you know, why do you love the weather so much? You always come in when there's a storm, and I'm like, I wouldn't know how to work storms if I didn't come in when there was a storm. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Everyone who's uncomfortable working a storm, come in for them. Watch
it's
what
a
happens.
Great, yeah, it's a great experience. And I it's stressful as all hell, but
oh yeah, it's terrible.
when you're done, like when the storm's over and like everyone's where they're supposed to be, your CAD screen is cleared, you're like, I did that. Like, and yeah. I handled it. And I knew, like, my instincts kicked in, my training kicked in. And you also know, at least, I don't think that everyone's dispatch mind is the same, but like the dispatcher in me always goes, okay, I did all that. What could I have done better? Right. And then like, what should I know more? What do I have to look at in terms of resources? Or what can I tell my supervisor? Hey, this would be super helpful if you guys did this, this, and this, or if we had this, this, and this, this would be smoother.
Oh, you mean all the things that run through our head when we're laying down going to sleep?
Yeah.
Or in the shower.
Right.
Yeah.
When we're winding down. I was going to say, I'm in the middle of writing. Like we're trying to start a drill like series at our center so that we can go through these major incidents together so that we understand how to work them. Because we do have like a huge influx of newer people who have less than 5 years on. And I started to write some of these like exercises and my manager was like, oh my gosh, these are great. And I'm like, these are things that have already happened to us. I didn't pull any of these out of my butt. Like these are actual things that we've gone through that I'm taking the experience from and putting it. Cause like, you don't know what's going to happen. Like I said, in a weather thing.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know what equipment's going to fail. You don't know what radios are not going to work in a specific area of town, whatever.
Yeah.
Until it actually happens. So like you just plan for, all right, so you're working and you have no communication with any of your fire units. What do you do? And you just have to figure it out.
It's funny, you know, we were talking about that in class this week, especially with things like we had the derecho come through, you know, that hit. And last we were talking about how a lot of times when those incidents occur, you know, like we just have our general staff. I mean, like, unless we know for sure that there is like some major incident with weather, I mean, that's, you really can't predict it, right?
You get some prediction, but you also,
But you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, sometimes the storm, you know, just goes north and it doesn't even hit you. And, you know, everybody's all ready. And
then you're
sitting there
with 10 extra people. Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, and a lot of times in those situations, when you get into it, and you're like, oh my gosh, and the phone won't stop ringing. And I mean, you know, the calls are stacking up and everything is going on. You know, do you send out an emergency page? Because now you're having your people come out in this, which you're not going to do, right? And usually by the time they all get there, it's over.
Right. Yeah.
you know, by the time you get a page out and people actually come in, the worst of it, and now it's just, you know, picking through the collateral damage that can, you know, just be done. So, yeah. You know, like what do you do in those situations? You know, how having a plan for that is good, you know, because I think that makes it smoother when everything just kind of explodes. It gives you, you know, a finite list of things to make sure you're checking off and handling.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome.
So do you, I'm sorry, go ahead, Kaylee.
No, I was just gonna say for you guys, I know that you'd said you guys send out like a page of some kind to get people. Is there anyone that is like, do you have like an on-call system of any kind, or is it just whoever is available?
We don't know our pages. So we used to page through Outlook. It would just send out like a page to like, it sends, you can choose text, email, or both, you know, how you receive it. So that's like how we handled like overtime stuff like that. Anything that's a force, because we're not 12s. So it would be somebody hanging over from the shift that is already there. And it would be somebody being forced in from the shift beforehand. And we would just call them directly to make sure that they know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, anytime an overtime page comes out or when there is a need, it just goes to everybody, kind of like an all hands on deck. If you can come in, you know, for storms and things, it's hard because we might not even answer the phone. Our phones might roll to our backup agency. So, you know, some people will just, if they see that, they'll just come in. You know,
I think we're getting a system like that, but I'm not sure.
Honestly, it's so nice to not have to sit there and call and person call. After person. Because when you're in a weather incident, when, you know, when
you don't have a phone, are so inundated available.
And they're rolling. I mean, everybody's lines are rolling.
Right.
I had that with you guys with the last storm. I actually couldn't get through to you guys on the phone. So I called your neighboring agency that shared a CAD. I'm like, put in this structure fire and ship it to them. Right. Because I didn't know how else to get the call to you guys. And so
or like, I mean, go over countywide and be like, hey,
that wasn't working. we tried, you know, so finally yeah. It was just, you know, like it's by whatever means necessary. Right. So, but at least with having a paging system like that, I think that's so huge because you're not tying up a person calling one person at a time. I mean, how time consuming is that to, you know, especially for us with 26 people, you know, how right. time consuming is it to call right. so many people?
How does that
Madeline,
work for you, Madeline?
If you guys,
yeah.
Madeline, if you guys only have 6 people on your team, what if 4 of you aren't available?
It's never really happened. So, all right, I shouldn't say it's never happened. I cut 2 tendons and a nerve this year in my pinky, so I was out for quite some time. And so we then were down to minimums, and then vacations came up for some people. So we really only had 2 people available to go on calls. Luckily, it was like a slow month, so okay. it wasn't anything too bad. I mean, they did have to go on pretty much everything, and I mean, our director, our deputy director, is really good at like if our team lead reaches out and be like, we're at bare minimums, we're going to need to use them more. They're like, we get it. It is what it is. So I think that's great. And then like our center in itself, because we're so large, we have a paging system, and when it comes right. to like storms and stuff like that. We have emergency staffing where it's like a page all, and then whoever can come in. Usually they'll say like how many people they want and to give them a call so they can let you know like, hey, we still need you. But we also have unplugged supervisors. So it's not that person is also trying to deal with radio traffic. They're solely focused on the center in itself.
Getting coverage.
Staffed and whatever else is needed.
That's all. Yeah, we're such a small center that we can't mitigate any of those issues.
Right. Our supervisors are frontline supervisors.
It's really weird.
Positions.
How often are you guys getting called out as far as the tech team goes?
It changes monthly. It's different. But so we don't do just like when you think SWAT, not you specifically, but like when people think SWAT team, they think like serious, barricaded, active mm-hmm. shooter. But we also do search warrants when they're high risk. And that's planned in advance, obviously, because they're doing, you know, surveillance and stuff like that. So we could do maybe like 2 search warrants a month, maybe 4 search warrants a month, but that kind of stuff, we know
ahead of time. That's a great idea.
Fuck yeah, it is.
Yeah, we know ahead of time. And there's certain criteria the department that has a search warrant has to go through to make sure that they need the SWAT team. Like, there has to be, like, I don't know the specific criteria because I'm not one of the head of people, but like, I know it has to meet that criteria before they're willing to go. But then they set up a plan ahead of time. We all meet at that station's police department. And then tactical dispatchers won't go on scene for that. We'll just dispatch from the police department. So we sit there, we'll scribe, and we'll do radio. You only need two people for that. If not three, if you have your team leader there. But it, honestly, it depends. Like, some years there's not that many. And then the next year you're slammed. Because we are a countywide team, going from what was Fiat to now the DuPage countywide team, we're taking a lot more calls, I would say, just because right. you're covering the county as a whole. But it's also, while you're using the team more, it's great experience. I mean, you're learn. It's different situations all the time. It's really interesting.
What That's is awesome. So you say more? What do you think on average per year your team is getting called out?
I mean, there's also times when I guess it's hard to put a number on it. I mean, maybe at the 200. And that wow. sounds like a lot. Wow. Wait, but that sounds like a lot, but I'm not going to all 200 of them.
No, I get and it. It's just that. So here's my thought.
That's a high volume for and tech,
response. I could be exaggerating a bit, but you also have to think about we're different components too. So we have a mm-hmm. crisis negotiation team,
sure.
which could respond without the SWAT team. And that's kind of been like with the whole mental health goal yeah. of it is crisis response first. And then if someone else is needed, then we'll bring in the muscle.
So you know, do you go, kind of are you out on that as well? Or so does we crisis? Have, okay.
So recently within the last 2 years, they've pushed for tactical dispatch to be with crisis negotiation. So we are a part of their component now too. We won't obviously make the calls or anything, but we'll scribe and do anything that they need on scene as well, which is a whole new role to learn, which is also why it's great to have six, if not eight people on the team to then yeah. disperse those calls to.
So so for years by us, and you know, I'm going to take a moment, you know, our agency is for the most part, it's like any decent sized good agency, right? I feel like our agency is a very good agency, but there's holes in things. There just are. And some of that changes when you get new administration or you get younger people that move into command positions that want to push for this because they have a different way of thinking versus an old school mentality that this is police officer's role and we don't need anybody's stinking help, you know, just screw you guys, whatever. You just do what we tell you to do. And I'm being a bit facetious. I know that isn't necessarily the way they say it, but that's how it feels sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. So we've talked about, we've had people that have gone to tactical dispatch class. I've been to so many classes. I'm pretty sure I went to one several years ago. They even tried to get us into hostage negotiation and it just fell apart. They never had it happen. And I know we have fairly good sized potential consolidation coming up, at least in one single building where agencies are going to be coming into one main building. And if those agencies decide to consolidate police and fire and stuff, then that's going to be a whole different story that's happening there. And I'm blown away the fact that even if you overestimated by 20%, you know, that's still a shit ton of calls that affords dispatchers an opportunity to do something other than just sit in the room and do the same old stuff, you know, because mm-hmm. most places you have a choice. You can be a dispatcher or you can be a supervisor. That's also a dispatcher.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it, because you might be able to become a director depending on where you're at and your agency. Yeah. You know, a lot of agencies, ours for the longest time, wanted the director to be a command officer. You know, a sergeant or a lieutenant. There was no civilian allowed in that role. And now our director's actually a civilian. Now, he was part of EMA forever, all over mm-hmm. the place, and still is. You know, he wears, he's got like, hats. Yeah, it's ridiculous. But we're not given those opportunities and trying to convince people that we should be in those roles. And it's frustrating and also encouraging. You know, it's frustrating to see that your agency, who's an hour away from point to point, you know, we're talking, not even if I just go corner of county to corner of county, but an hour away, let's say, that much farther ahead in the way that they think, in the way that you train, and the shit that you guys have put in place to, I don't know, to make all this stuff happen. It's amazing to me. So it's frustrating because you're so close. You know, it's not like we're doing something here and, you know, a 1200 person town with a police department in rural Mississippi is doing things completely different because that's where they're at. You know, we're right next to each other. And yeah, you guys are, I feel like, this much farther ahead than probably every agency in our county for the most part, I would guess, with some exception, of course. But it's also encouraging to know that that is actually occurring in our area. I would love to be able to come out on one of the exercises if they would afford somebody to observe. You know, obviously an incident is one thing, but on your exercise, maybe if they would let us, we could even have a couple of the HTH members come out and do it. But even as our agency would be awesome, because the more we can get, I feel like if we grab this stuff and we bring it and say, hey, here's the idea, it's more accepted instead of waiting around for these people to try and figure it out, you know, because then we can present it with factual information instead of hoping that they're going to accept us for the role that we actually play, you know. So cool in the fact that a number of calls is just, I thought you were going to say,
even half 15, that, even 100 is like, that's well, a third of your year.
Yeah. And I mean, I want to stress too, because like I say 200 and I'm thinking of like first merge too, we were used a lot. And then I think they decided they had to change a bit of the criteria and that kind of stuff. And it also depends on how many crazies are coming out this year, you know what I mean, that kind of stuff too.
But it depends on what's going on.
Yeah, and I mean, they've expanded our role, which is kind of really neat too, so we get to see different components of the team as well. Like, we're not going out with a canine component, because what are we doing with a canine component? I'll pet them, but you know what I mean, like, we're not going
with that. But like, I'm not really useful right now.
Yeah, like, I'll good dog.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm super grateful that I have the opportunity to be a part of such a, and they say it every single time we have like our bows, like, we're an elite team. You have to uphold certain standards when you're on it. Be proud of what you've accomplished, but then also strive for better every single time. And that's why we train as much as we do. And I know that some of my coworkers that aren't a part of the team will be like, another training. And I'm like, yeah, but like, now we can work, like, I'm excited because I can work at this component, or I can try this aspect of it. And 200 seems like a lot, but when you break it apart with 8 different people, and then you add in that we're not responding to every single one of them. Some of the search warrants are out of county, and my center doesn't always let us go for that just because it's a safety factor. So they don't want us responding out of county sometimes. Sometimes they'll allow it depending on manpower and that kind of thing. And then, sometimes they don't necessarily need dispatch. They're like, oh, this is a quick call, we don't need to set up everything, it's like a one and done. Or they do like a mixed match of, they have a barricaded, but they pretty sure he'll come out. There's 6 guys on the SWAT team that they know of in the area. We'll call them in, they'll handle it, and that's it. So it changes, but because we're such a large team now, that's why you have such a volume. And in terms of training and coming to our trainings, I'll talk to my team leader and see like what is allowed, because we do have people watch, and usually it's like either like a police cadet or volunteers that'll be like actor based kind of things. But I can see, because it's always, even just sitting and watching is beneficial, just to see how they operate and what they're looking at and what they're looking for, or how the different components interact together is really neat.
That would be incredible. Do you ever come across responders that are surprised that there's a tactical dispatch team? Like, they're like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, there are times where like, they're like, oh, you have dispatchers on your SWAT team? And I'm like, that's not a thing.
You're like, shouldn't there be? What's going on? I was
like, how do you not? Like, how do you focus all that? Like, who's in charge of that? Like, but yeah, it's, and I mean, for some teams it works not to have one, but I do think it's super beneficial, even for that dispatcher to then have a better understanding of how even just regular beat officers are approaching a scene, because they're taught these tactics too. It's really, it's, I think it's beneficial for everyone to have some sort of training in it.
Well, I think any responder that's worked with a good tactical dispatcher can tell you that there is definitely a need for it. There is a need for that role.
Well, yeah, it's the fact that something you said in there was that they, first off, they created it and they make you guys part of it. And that they're expanding your role. Like, that tells me that they see the benefit, they understand it. And now they're like, okay, there's more of this. So it's funny that you brought up the canine, because we talked about this recently by us a few weeks ago, the sergeant that's in charge of our canine unit. So first off, I think we've added three more canines, Charisse? Is it three more? So we added
three more. I feel like you guys have a new dog every week.
We just got three new ones.
We have seven total now.
So yeah, now we're going to have seven, which is crazy. It's never been that way.
I'm sorry. Six. We have six.
Is that okay?
Because Riker replaced Diesel.
No, but we have Duke,
we have Duke, Dax, Riker, Boomer, Echo, and Axel.
Okay. I thought we had seven too.
Well, if we used to have Bones too.
Yeah. Yeah. He, but
so
the
great names.
Yeah. But they let the grade school kids name them. I'm not even kidding. They let these grade school kids name them, and they always pick awesome names. You know, it's not like, you know, cheese doodle or some shit like that. It's always something that works, you know.
Well, wasn't Bones your cadaver dog?
Well, yeah, that was that's a sore spot for some people, I think. Technically he was, yes, and it was through the coroner's office, but there was some different issues with that. But and he was very socialized too. So the coroner would come in and visit us, and he would bring him in, and he'd get in your lap and do all kinds of stuff. Whereas some of them just want to chew your fucking face off. No play.
Ours has to be muzzled when he's in the dispatch center, because he won't.
Nope. It's
really, he's very sweet when he has a muzzle on.
Yeah. Oh, of course he does, because he knows.
Because he's not working.
But we
and it is seven. I'm sorry, Norm. What's Andrew's dog's name? Martini.
Martini.
No, Martini is the deputy.
I wish they would have named him Rossi. That was my vote.
His name is Martini.
No, his
handler is Martini, and I said the dog should have been Rossi.
Yeah, Martini and Rossi.
Oh, he's oh my Martin. God.
Showing my age.
Yeah, me too.
So, yeah, we do have seven.
So the our sergeant that's in charge of the canine unit came in, and he showed us this software now that's called Pack Track. So whenever they go out on a track, they initiate the software, we can log into it, and it's within like 10 meters of their location, and it updates it every so many seconds. So we can follow along to where they're at.
Oh, wow.
Brilliant. It's genius. But the issue is, or that has come up, that we have to figure out between dispatching them, because, you know, you said, man, there may not be a need for me to be out on a canine incident. Well, maybe there is, because what came up with us recently is, several times we've had them say, can you open up the software and keep track of us? Who's going to do that? I don't have a person to sit here and watch you do that.
Right.
And it's not, we haven't discussed this. We got showed how to use it in case we need it to keep an eye on you, but there's been nothing discussed about actually
dedicating someone
you
and to do
taking
that.
The responsibility off of you to call out where you're going. Because that did happen. They didn't call out any of their incidents or any of their locations. And it's education is all it is. Nobody did anything wrong. It's just us all getting on the same page and knowing, hey, listen, we don't have the manpower, because it's no different if we're holding the air for an incident. Now we've tied up a person, two people technically, because this channel is now dedicated to this person. And this channel is dedicated to all the other traffic that might happen. And it's the same thing. If you want somebody to sit there and dedicate that time. So I could easily see where a tactical dispatcher role on a major incident with canines could fill that void, you know, when
you said absolutely.
That. So I think some of the
responders think that if a phone's not ringing, we're not doing anything. And it's like, no. Just because there's not radio traffic right now doesn't mean I'm just sitting here. Like, I'm doing other stuff. Right. So they don't realize that, like, oh, you can't dedicate a dispatcher to just watching my location? Like, no, of course not. I'm working. I'm doing other crap right now.
But there's other components.
That's right.
Yeah, like I do a lot of other things.
Mm-hmm. So we have, you know, even by us, we have like a special investigations group, and they're always out doing gang stuff. Or what did Sharice just do?
I think she just spilled her drink.
Okay. That looked like she was picking up like poop or something.
Dog poop? Yeah, like, no, I think she spilled her drink.
It's her living room. I don't know. One of the kids crap on the floor or something. What happened?
No, anyway. This just puked all over my couch.
Oh, fun.
Oh no.
That's about it's to puke cat. Again.
This.
Yeah.
For that's everyone that can't see it, her yeah. cat just threw up on her couch.
Doesn't nice. Deserve a name.
Awesome.
This, nothing. Yeah. This thing.
Nothing but excitement here on HTH Podcast. It's always an eventful moment. See, and you guys wanted me to drink, and you know, I could have puked on my couch. You never know.
You could have puked on Sharice's couch.
I would love to puke on Sharice's couch, actually. I think we have these groups, and they go out and they do search warrants, but it's always, hey, if you have somebody available, can you monitor our channel? That's how it works. And if we're busy, we're not, you know, we'll turn it up. Everybody will turn it up so they can hear it. One person will be on there. But if you're on the phone and you're doing something, we're not listening to you. And it's come to that point where we tell them, listen, if you have any kind of, if you need to run somebody, or if you need to, if you have some sort of information that needs to be looked up, you need to do it on the main channel, because we're listening to you to see if the shit's hitting the fan. And that's literally for the most part what we're doing, you know, mm-hmm. because it's rare we're ever fully staffed in our center. I mean, as far as the number of people we have working, yes, but somebody inevitably always takes the day off. You know, as soon as we realize we have six people on our shift, I'm like, shit, I could have taken the day off. You're like, is it too late? I'll see you guys later. So those roles that you explained is very encouraging and exciting to see. And I think it's an amazing idea. If I hadn't been where I was for 12 years, I would say, hey, are you guys hiring? You know, because it's not that far from me.
We are. DUCOM is one of my, if I was closer to you, or if you guys were closer to me, just because of that tech dispatch team. I think it's so cool that you guys do that. I feel like you guys are very, very valued in your center. And I think your director and your responders obviously contribute to that. Like, I think you guys are very appreciated, and that's awesome to see, especially in a center that size.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a huge agency.
Yeah, we do get a lot of really unique opportunities, which is really beneficial to everyone who works there.
Yeah.
Not that everyone can go to all those opportunities, but at least one person is bringing something back that then we can train on or talk to each other. Even just talking to each other about it, you learn something.
Yeah.
Well, it shows that your hard work, you know, when they're creating opportunities for you guys, if people are interested and they qualify, meaning they're dedicated to improving, and you know, there are people that just want to come in and do their job, and they do it fine, you know, mm-hmm. or even very well, we'll say, but that's all they want to do. There's nothing wrong with that, but mm-hmm. they're affording you the opportunity. They're affording everybody the opportunity to put in for a position like that. So, you know, you don't see that everywhere there, and they just aren't there because, again, traditionally the thought process is this is a police person's role, not a dispatcher's role. And mm-hmm. it's like, well, you don't do this every day anyway. I take hundreds of calls every week, and you take 15, 20, you know, depending on what it is and how busy it is. Maybe you take 40 calls, but it's in a completely different context of what we're doing than what you're doing.
Well, it speaks volumes to the work that you guys have put in. Obviously, because
absolutely
you're giving them a reason to value you and appreciate you and see the value in your role as all of these cool specialty things that you guys do. So kudos to your team. I mean, your entire center as a whole, to your director. I know that you're going to be losing him shortly here. That's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
But he's leaving the industry altogether, isn't he? Well, not, he's going private.
I know he's going federal. I know he's going to DC, but I don't know exactly what
he's... Good for him. He started up here. Wasn't he director at CENCOM for a while too?
Yes.
Yeah.
I believe so. Yeah.
Wow. Good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so. He's built a pretty extensive career.
Right. He sure has.
Yeah. So hopefully you guys get someone equally as awesome as his, as him, to fill that role for you guys.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Yeah.
So I just want to ask really quick, are you guys union?
Yes.
And is the tactical team, is that covered separately, or are you guys just blanket covered under that contract? Do you get paid for being on call? I always like to ask these questions.
Yeah.
So I don't get, I'm a steward as well. So I don't get paid for being on call. If I go out to a call, I'll get overtime.
Okay.
We don't have the specific role explained in our contract.
It's just a skill, like a training officer or something, basically. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not like additional pay or anything like that?
No, it's just either base pay or overtime, depending on what it is. And like, if we have training, majority of the time, like, I get an adjusted day off. So it's not like I'm fighting overtime to go to that training.
They'll flex you.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, and again, that's awesome. That speaks volumes to what you guys have built there, because a lot of people wouldn't want that added responsibility without some kind of, you better pay me $5 extra an hour to go do that.
And I think that's a huge thing you have to consider when you're joining the team, is like, it's, you have to be dedicated. It has to be something that you're actually interested in doing and being a part of, because it is time consuming to a certain extent. But to me, it's the reward of going and helping and seeing and applying that knowledge when I go back to the center is huge. Right. I think it's worth it.
Well, and it's to kind of touch on, piggyback off of what Norm had essentially said, it also depends too, you know, for some of us, this is a career. For some of us, this is a job.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I think for those of us that, you know, are going to be in this long term or have been in this long term, you know, a lot of us like to do those things to further our knowledge and our skill set for what we do.
Right.
Yeah.
I think
and there's nothing wrong if you just want to be a call taker. Nothing wrong with that. But I think, you know, a lot of us do like opportunities like this and jump at those chances when they come up, because they are so few and far between for us, because I mean, you know, our skill set is pretty specific for what we do. You know, it's hard to leave this position and go somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know, to do any other kind of, because like not much of this transfers over, you know.
Right.
Yeah. So absolutely.
Yeah. That's why I'm always interested in, whenever I come across someone who has stopped being a dispatcher and has gone to another, I always, my question is like, what are you doing now? I want to know like what you ended up doing, and then trying to see like, okay, you took that, like what skill did you use to find that job?
I think a big part of it, like you were saying, Charisse, is I think a lot of people come to work as a telecommunicator with the goal of it being their career, right? They're looking forward to it. It's exciting. I'm going to do this. And you then get in there. They realize
it's not that.
And well, they realize that the opportunities aren't realistically there. So right. Then, or they go to the first couple of years, they go to this class, they go to a tactical dispatch class. Oh, this is awesome. I would love to do this. The trainer there has a SWAT team back in California that they're part of, and their agency does all this. And then you come back and womp, womp, it doesn't work. You don't get it. Sure. So then it just becomes work to them, because there's no opportunity to do something else, at least where you're at. Part of that is they're not looking outside of there, because there's lots of other opportunities in the telecommunicator world for people to go and do if you're interested, but maybe they're just not as interesting to them, you know. But I think there's sometimes a shift, and I also think it can be sparked, but I will say, as supervisors, when we have people that go to a class and they're excited about it, we need to make sure we do whatever we can to keep them excited about it, and or keep track of when an opportunity pops up like that. We keep that person in mind, because we know they were excited, and we don't want them to think that we forgot about them, even though your agency may not have a whole team doing this, you know, not as fortunate as Madeline's agency. I don't know why I said Madison.
That's okay.
But, I see too many thoughts in my old brain. But the, it's, it, you have, we have to make sure we keep people encouraged. I've had people come back and say, oh, I went to this QC class and I'm really interested in starting this program. And then you bring it to the people that earn that, that, you know, can make a difference in it. And they're like, oh yeah, we were thinking about, you know, and that's where it goes. And they're still, they're asking, I'm like, okay, I haven't forgotten, believe me.
Yeah.
I'm keeping track of the fact that, that you and this other person want to do this. And when it comes up, you're going to be the first person I come to make it happen, you know? But I understand why it goes from career to job for some folks, because they don't feel like there's any opportunity. So they just get, they stay, because let's face it, after a while you get paid really freaking well and it doesn't make sense, at least around here. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, smaller agencies in a different part of the country, maybe not as appreciated as well when it comes to pay. So, but once you're in there and you've been there for several years, your pay is at a certain point where you probably aren't going to go somewhere else and work, because you're not going to make that money. Now you're stuck. You're stuck in a job that doesn't give you something extra and you wish it did, you know? So, but I love it. I think it's all very encouraging. I love the fact that your agency does it. It sounds like you're amazing at it. You know, you're very dedicated to it, and that's kudos to you for doing that. It's so cool. I'm going to say it again. We would love to come watch a scenario, see what you do in the trailer or where at your command post, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I would love to be a part of that if that opportunity is there. So
yeah, I feel like the team is very open to trying to show other counties how this works and get it across the board, because it is super beneficial. I'll talk to our team leader and see if there's some sort of opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll volunteer. I'll be a crazy person or a victim or whatever you need. I'll be a tree. Yep.
I'll be a tree.
Hang out in the park and tree.
I'll bring sandwiches. I can bring
bring some orange slices. Yeah. No, it's been awesome talking to you, Madeline. We really appreciate you taking the time to come and talk to us today.
Yeah, thanks for giving me this opportunity.
Yeah, this was definitely a big SWAT dispatch teams are not a huge thing, so a lot of people wanted to talk to someone who works for one. So we're super excited to be able to talk to you. But yeah, thanks for hanging out with us today, and we will see you guys next time.
Bye.
Bye.